Last month, following a weekend of deadly mass shootings in Dayton, Ohio, and El Paso, Texas, President Trump voiced public support for a policy that GOP politicians often oppose.
I can tell you there's tremendous goodwill for meaningful, I'm talking about meaningful, add that word, meaningful background checks so that sick and demented people don't carry around guns.
This past weekend, a gunman in Odessa, Texas, killed 7 people and injured more than 20. But speaking after that shooting, the president signaled a different stance on background checks.
If you look at the last 4 or 5, going back even 5 or 6 or 7 years, for the most part, as strong as you make your background checks, they would not have stopped any of it.
In an August phone call with Wayne LaPierre, chief executive of the National Rifle Association, the president reportedly told the gun lobbyist that he will stop calling for universal background checks. Currently, federal laws do not require background checks on gun sales made by private sellers or at gun shows. But the latest polling shows that 91% of Democrats and 79% of Republicans support closing that loophole. LaPierre and the NRA continue to exert major political sway in Washington, but the organization increasingly finds itself mired in controversy, from legal and financial uncertainty to its recent breakup with its longtime advertising firm. I'm Tanzina Vega, and today on The Takeaway, we're looking into how gun lobbyists continue to influence pushes for gun control in D.C., even as the NRA weathers its internal storms. For more now, I'm joined by Alex Yablon, a reporter at The Trace, a nonprofit newsroom dedicated to gun-related issues. Alex, thanks for coming back on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And also with us is Richard Feldman, a former NRA regional political director and lobbyist, and also the author of Ricochet, a book about the NRA. Richard, good to have you with us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Alex, let's start with you. We mentioned at the top that the NRA has been in financial and legal trouble recently. There have been investigations in Congress and by the New York Attorney General. Briefly, catch us up on what's happening in those cases.
Sure. So the NRA is having some of its materials sought after by some congressional committees who believe it may have committed campaign finance violations. And the Attorney General of New York, which has an enormous amount of power over the NRA because the organization is chartered in New York, is examining whether revelations of self-dealing and high-level corruption and financial mismanagement might have violated the organization's charter and local nonprofit laws. And so that's probably the more serious of the two investigations.
We know, Richard, that in April, the NRA president, Oliver North, at the time said the legal fees posed an existential threat to the financial stability of the NRA. That was in an internal memo. Richard, you've written about the inner workings of the NRA in your book, Ricochet. How does this compare to what we've seen in the past?
Well, frankly, we've never seen anything that even comes close to comparing. One has to probably go back to the 1970s. To see an upheaval within the NRA anywhere approximating these ranks. And we haven't seen it in a generation. And certainly the final version of this story is yet to be written.
And I'm wondering, Richard, we mentioned that the NRA parted ways with its longtime advertising firm, Ackerman McQueen, shut down NRA TV as well. Are we noticing a shift in messaging from the NRA to its members?
Well, I haven't really seen it yet. Certainly, it's an opportunity for the NRA leadership to take a different tact.
I want to pose the next question to both of you. Alex, I'll ask you first. Again, the overwhelming majority of Americans on both sides of the political spectrum say they support background checks, and yet nothing has been done. Alex, why are politicians still unwilling to back gun control reforms, at the minimum background checks, if the majority of Americans in both parties support it?
Even though the majority of Americans support universal background checks, those who oppose it are extremely well organized and have this as kind of their top issue. So in primary elections, a small number of really engaged, passionate voters can make the difference in ways that general public sentiment might not. And particularly in the Republican Party, where politicians generally fear their right flank and the possibility of being primaried more than they fear, you know, a general election loss, that's led them to oppose policies like universal background checks that enjoy almost universal approval.
Richard, I'd love to get your thoughts on that. And I'm reminded of an editorial cartoon not too long ago where after another mass shooting in the United States, which killed civilians, there was an editorial cartoon that showed a number of civilians who had been killed and Uncle Sam essentially in the middle of this holding the NRA and saying, you're going to be okay, you'll be safe. Richard, that cartoon, I think, is emblematic of this issue of how the NRA has such a stronghold on some of our government officials. Would you agree?
This entire issue involving guns is an extraordinarily potent issue in the psyche of the American people. And after being involved for 40 years, I think it's more because it is a symbolic issue than it is about the guns themselves. And the language that we use to describe this issue almost determines the outcome of any policy considerations that we could move forward. Gun owners and non-gun owners alike are in almost universal, to use that word, agreement that dangerous, mentally challenged people shouldn't have guns, unsupervised juveniles shouldn't have access to guns, and violent predatory criminals shouldn't have access to guns. It makes you stop and wonder what we're fighting over. And I think the answer in many ways is we're not fighting over the policy, although we use policy language to describe the political fight that we're always having over one side or another are winning. Let's use this universal background check. The word universal is the word that gets in the craw of so many gun owners, the ones Alex rightly describes as the engaged activist ones. They're concerned that if every transfer of every gun at every juncture has to go through a background check and paperwork, we will come to a day where if you possess a gun that didn't, you must be in violation of something. Now, I agree with Alex and have since I ran the Firearm Industries Trade Association 20 years ago that when you transfer a gun to someone you don't know, essentially a commercial transaction, whether it be at a gun show, a flea market, an online sale, it should go through a background check. The rub comes in when you're transferring a gun to a relative, to a close friend. In my case, my former police chief. That's where the issue really hits the road. And if we would just sit back, we could all get 99% of what we want, which are those commercial transactions between strangers.
More recently, however, we know that the Odessa, Texas shooting that happened this weekend, according to the Associated Press, a law enforcement official told the AP that that shooter failed a 2014 background check due to, quote, a mental health issue. Alex, how effective are background checks really, and are they essentially the lowest hanging fruit here?
So in all but 18 states, you can buy a gun without going through a background check in a private sale like the ones that Richard was describing. And now this can be at a gun store or it can be arranged on, you know, through websites like ArmsList, which is kind of like Craigslist for guns. And so that really seriously undermines the effectiveness of a background check system. As we saw with the Odessa shooter, even though he was denied at a retail sale, there's an enormous supply of guns that can be accessed just through buying from private individuals. And when you sell a gun in a private sale, you're under no obligation to figure out if the person you're selling it to could be prohibited from buying one.
Richard, we just heard that Walmart has announced that it is going to stop selling guns, certain types of guns, and more importantly, ammunition. And they, of course, represent 20% of ammunition sales across the United States. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, my first thought was that in the 1950s, the largest seller of ammunition in the United States of America was F.W. Woolworth, and everyone knows what happened to them. Now, I'm not saying the same is happening to Walmart, but it just pushes, it really doesn't change much. Maybe it makes it a little less convenient for some people to purchase ammo, and they did have lower prices generally. But there are thousands of retail firearm dealers in this country that all sell ammunition, and you can buy ammunition in most states online.
Want to bring up the 2020 election here, Alex. We know the NRA played a significant role in getting Trump elected in 2016. With its current financial state and the other problems we mentioned at the top, what does this mean for 2020? Will they continue to have political sway?
Well, they absolutely still have the president's ear. As you discussed in the intro, President Trump quickly backtracked after, you know, saying he would back, you know, some kind of strengthening of background checks, and personally assured Wayne LaPierre that he wouldn't do that. The question is, what about other Republicans? Are they going to start backing away? I think that some have been sending some very vague, tentative signals that they would like to vote for some kind of new gun reform that would have been unthinkable even a year ago. And even in places like Texas, you know, I saw this week Dan Patrick, the lieutenant governor there, who's a very strong ally of the NRA, who has dismissed things like red flag laws, call for a requirement that stranger-to-stranger gun sales go through background checks. And that's a pretty big change from the past.
Richard, I'd love to get your thoughts on that. Will the NRA have sway in 2020? We've got about 30 seconds in the segment.
Yeah, well, we make a mistake when people think that the NRA's power is based on its professional lobbyists in Washington. It's the fact that it's able to communicate with really tens of millions of Americans. It does whatever you agree on the gun issue or disagree, it does what you do in a democracy to be successful. You educate, you inform, and you motivate your supporters, and you get them to the polls on election day. And if you bring enough of them with you, you win.
Richard Feldman is a former NRA regional political director and author of Ricochet, a book about the NRA, and Alex Yablon is a reporter at The Trace. Thanks so much to you both.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
This is Jill from Austin, and I am a Texan gun owner, and I absolutely support federal gun control legislation as long as it doesn't screw over people of color and folks with mental illness.
Yeah, my name's John, and I'm calling from Vine Grove, Kentucky. I do not support any further gun laws. There are enough laws restricting law-abiding gun owners already, and any more laws would have no impact on criminals. Thank you.
This is Trevor from Sacramento. The problem with the gun control proposals that are put up is that they only affect law-abiding citizens who are not the people we need to worry about. Most of these mass shooters have either never done anything wrong or have gotten around the system very easily.
I am a military veteran. I am a gun owner, and I am absolutely appalled that we are allowing our politics to kill our citizens, although not very surprised. What I want as the first act is a repeal of the prohibition of any research done by the National Institute of Health and the Center for Disease Control concerning how gun violence impacts communities and best practices and worst practices.
Hi, this is Randy from Portland, Oregon. We do not need to have assault rifles given out to mass and public. As a gun owner myself, I would prefer to see a specialized permit provide more protection and less loopholes for dangerous situations to occur.
Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or tweet us at The Takeaway.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
wherever you get your podcasts.